This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 9th of October, 1951. The title of this lecture is Statics and Motions and Axioms 1 to 14. This lecture is 77 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Thank you. Well, we're going to get right down to work here, or up to work. That's the best. There are a certain number of things which you have been given, possibly as your technique of effort processing. Most of them are right, but one of them's wrong, and I'm going to cover that right away. Boys, I got you squirreled up a little bit on ARC. Definitions being handed out on ARC is just between ourselves bunk. You see, ARC is still ARC. And don't doubt that for a minute. What happens is that ARC sags into belief as soon as the apparent absolute of a belief starts entering into ARC. There is unfluid understanding. And it doesn't become understanding at all, it becomes belief. Belief on the lower ranges to an organism which has to be in motion to support itself is, of course, apathy. Because belief is no motion, and ARC is motion. I'll make that much clearer to you. Don't start abandoning ARC just because it can sag into belief. I'm going to give you a very brief resume of the axioms themselves, give you a little bit higher level of initiation of these axioms than are given in the axioms themselves. Contained actually in a definition of Dianetics. Dianetics is a science of statics and motions pertaining to human thought and behavior. Statics and motions. Don't get so static that you ignore motions in Dianetics. And don't get into such furious motion that you ignore statics. The whole of the postulate of statics and motions has to do with the fact that the highest echelon, which is now contactable, has been an echelon which has been contactable in a nebulous sort of a way for a great many centuries. They've called it a number of things. All it is a static. It's a thing of no motion, and that's theta. The difference is we build a bridge to it. Doesn't make Dianetics a religion any more than it makes physics a religion, because physics starts with a static too. Here's a static. It's a very strange static. It's causative. It's a causative static. Now, one has the choice in this of being cause or effect, dead or in motion. In other words, you have a point from which motion is entered, handled, and controlled. And this point itself is not in motion. It's an anchor point. That point is belief, faith, or they've called it a thousand different things. Calling it theta now, which is a mathematical symbol, not a new name for the human soul. So here you have a static point. When a person dies, he loses physical universe motion. He is therefore static. In order to go into motion again, he would have to become alive. Now, regardless of whether people die and come to life again, that's beside the point. The point is that there is an optimum motion as established by the band range of tolerance of the human body. Your heart beats, it's anywhere from 60 to 90 a minute. Your temperature hangs between 95 and 100. 101, 102 gets up much above that and gets to be a rough deal. Just contact the effort there to cough. Go ahead, contact the effort to cough. No, contact the effort to cough. Okay, when you have then a body which is alive, you have a body which should be moving somewhere in this rather narrow tolerance band. Man is on a terrifically small tolerance band. Actually, he goes up 3 or 4 miles and he's done for. He can't breathe. He goes down in the sea 2 feet and he can't breathe. He goes under the surface again, he's in a tolerance band as far as space on Earth is concerned. He has to get artificial thingamabobs and whatnots in order to exceed this tolerance band. Now, right on the surface of the Earth, it can't be too cold or too hot or he perishes. He's a delicate little microbe. 98.6 is what his temperature should stay at. His body, but not the causative force, but his body is a carbon-oxygen engine. Doesn't fit to say that because a person's a carbon-oxygen engine, there's nothing else there. Something like saying a railroad locomotive runs on steam. And then you forget the engineer. You don't have anything to do with the engineer. You point out to it and you say, you see, that runs all by itself. Now, that's the way the human body is. And if you just cut out the engineer occasionally, why, that steam engine runs better and a lot of other odds and ends of strange conclusions that have been reached about it. To say a person is an engine is true only in the sense of his physical self. He is an engine in motion. He's a motor engine, propulsion mechanism. He's a lot of things, but sitting along with that is what causes him to be an engine. On the physical universe, we have the science of physics, and physics tells you very adequately how this carbon-oxygen motor can work, but it can't build one. It's a very interesting motor. It's so fascinating that people haven't been able to get their attention off the drive wheels and things in order to take a look at what made it run. It's so fascinating to see a motor which prepares itself, which is self-determined, which has a lot of very interesting variations in it, and which produces biochemical products which are not duplicatable in the field of chemistry today by any other form or means, by any other means than employing life form themselves. Well, that's a very interesting thing. We can take a look at this carbon-oxygen motor and find out that it is in motion and that it has to sustain a certain optimum motion. You try to make the thing go too fast or you try to make it go too slow and it ceases to go into motion. It ceases to be motion. At that moment, it becomes static. It dies. Very simple. So that you've got a cycle going on there of causation, this causative force, theta. Causation starts in and you get something goes into motion. It follows this more or less optimum speed and it goes along with an optimum speed for a while and then it stops and they bury it. That's no motion. So it goes from no motion to no motion to a rather narrow tolerance band of a certain type of motion. Well, it's interesting that there are little gradient scales here we get gradient scales coming in. Very interesting that here we have the body objecting strenuously to either side of an optimum motion. It objects to motions which are too swift and motions which are too slow, both sides. And whenever the body is slowed down to a point where it is momentarily static, and by that I mean the heart skips a couple of beats and bloodstream doesn't pulse quite right, and the nerve energies don't channel in a line, and the alignment of the cells themselves is destroyed. The alignment of axioms and molecules inside the body is thrown out of kilter. In other words, you get a moment of stopped motion, which is not followed by death. Anytime you get one of these things, a person has come up against a static, and he will behave thereafter to avoid that static, either to attack it or get away from it or do something about it, but he'll do something about that static. He doesn't like that static. The worst thing that can happen to him is to stop altogether. So he fights any intermediate static. Any injury is a static. And he will also fight something which forces his heart up to 250 a minute or something like that. That also is starting to approach a static, because it'll go up just so fast and then stop. So he fights away from the upper and lower motion band and tries to stay in the middle of it and tries to stay in a tolerance level of operation. As long as he does this, he's alive. As long as the organism can continue to do this, it happens to be healthy. When it can't do this anymore, it ceases to be healthy. Now, the way that you train, quote, train, unquote, one of these organisms, is you beat it, and you put it in jail, and lock it up in closets, and you slow its motion down any way you can. And after a while, it gets obedient. Now, obedience is faith. It's belief. That's obedience. Motion slowed way down or speeded way up. And when the organism falls over into either of these two statics, too fast or too slow as far as it's concerned, it goes into apathy and hands its own identity over to the counter effort which forced it to do so. Hence you get valences. That'll be much more clearly explained as we go along here. As long as this organism is moving within the tolerance band, it has understanding. Now, a stop or a threatened stop by too fast or too slow sets up a wave. At very least, it sets up a wave which is a noise type of wave rather than a, you know what a noise wave looks like. You could graph sudden halts or sudden propulsions of the organism as you would regard the jagged noise wave. But in the middle, between these two, you have a harmonic wave with a certain amount of randomity to it, a certain amount of variation to it. This certain amount of variation varies, but in that band we have affinity, communication, and reality. Only in that band. It's when affinity, communication, and reality fall off into the zero motion of a static that it becomes a belief, and at that moment the body ceases to operate properly, becomes sick. Invalidation and domination are only efforts to slow down or speed up the body. That's all. They all come into that category. People are running faster than others, so they try to speed up the people who are running slower. People who are running slower try to slow down faster ones, and so forth. Within the species, there is an effort then to control and keep going in optimum motion. So, people who are moving too fast get into conflict, people who are moving too slow, and you get a beat or a noise level effect on your ARC, and they go out of communication and so forth with each other to some degree. They can't hook in on each other's wavelengths. But when ARC is deprived of motion, it can become belief. And what you are processing with effort processing is belief, not understanding, but belief. There's a cycle in progress whereby you get belief, understanding, belief, understanding, belief, understanding. That's a cycle. It goes like this. Lamp here is cause. Cause without effect. Greeks used to call this prime mover unmoved. This is cause without an effect. Rather weird sort of an idea, but actually, if you could just put this down as a philosophy of existence, I am going to live as a cause and not as an effect of my own causes. You'd be happy people if you could just do that. As a matter of fact, you can try to keep from being a cause affected by your own causes. When you self-determine non-survival activities, you are at that moment becoming an effect of your own causes. You postulate, you say, I am now going to, or from this moment on, I decide that. You know, like people are supposed to do every New Year's. Now, here he is as cause. He's postulating a cause. Now he steps forward in time and becomes the effect of his own cause. If you can just get up all the decisions anybody ever made about himself, you got a well man. Cause and effect. Here is cause without an effect, and then we have, below this, motion. Here's your initial motion. And then we have another static and a secondary motion. Now, as you go down the tone scale, you can plot this tone scale just this way. Statics. The church is quite correct in saying, above all is faith. That is one of the thousand various ways of saying that cause is cause and shouldn't be an effect of its own cause. Then they come down here, and they say, and you've got to have faith. Oh, that's great, that is. That puts them into the position of being a causative agent and gives you to them as messed. Because they say, you've got to have faith. The joke's on them, you've got faith. Nobody can take that away from you. But they start telling you, you have to have it, and that says you haven't got it. And the second it says you haven't got it, you don't have it. It's one of the neatest little invalidation mechanisms known. This runs over into all fields of invalidation. You can extrapolate all invalidations from this. Here's the fellow, everybody likes him, he's cheerful, he's happy, and somebody comes along and says, you know, you should be careful the way you treat people, because I've heard lately, you've just got to be good to people, you've got to be kind to people, and this fellow starts worrying. And he says, gee, I thought people liked me. He's made self-conscious at this moment. There's almost no limit to what a human being can do as long as he doesn't have this variety of stuff thrown at him in the guise of affinity, communication, and reality. People are postulating new realities for him. And every time he accepts one of these new realities, he's sort of sunk. But he's all right up until the moment he can have any God's quantity of n-grams or anything else. He's perfectly all right until he accepts one of these postulates that is handed to him. and adopts it to himself, and by his own self-determinism says, well, from here on, that's the way it is. That's a little boy suddenly saying to Mama, all right, I give up. I'll mind. He goes out of valence. He ceases to be alive. He's hit a stack. He goes out of valence. And you can watch this either in your cells or in pre-clears. And his reality goes boom. Perceptic shut off. You want to start getting perceptics on in the pre-clear. You want to find out the effort to believe. What is your effort to believe? You turn on somatics, face slaps, every other darn thing. The effort to believe, not the effort to agree, because he's not agreeing. He's just believing. He's a static state. All right, here he goes. Bang, out of valence. Off go the perceptics. Now, asking for his effort to believe Mama at this point. What is your effort to believe Mama at this point? Apathy. Then all of a sudden, tail with her. Meow! You've got the effort. Now you want the effort not to believe Mama. Your physio, brightness of the scene, a whole lot of recollections, and everything comes swarming in on him again. Oh, his childhood is blank. Everybody says this. My childhood is blank. It's just as blank as he has had to believe without understanding. You see, it's a sort of a slave state philosophy to tell people that they don't have understanding and that they must believe. That's great, because they have belief. What they have to acquire is understanding. The component parts of understanding are affinity, communication, and reality. The modus operandi of theta moving into the physical universe is an operandi of understanding. It unfortunately is accompanied by an enormous amount of force. And it hits a great many statics. Every time an organism dies, it is in a new static. As a consequence, it keeps coming down the tone scale. Statics, statics, statics. Now, all you've got to do to a human being is convince them that they have to believe. And if you just work on them hard and tell them they've got to believe, they've got to believe, they've got to believe, don't invite any understanding. And if they say, well, I don't see it, you say, well, I tell you, God is good, and we're going to kick your teeth in unless you believe it. And the fellow gets in a bad state right away, because he starts to sink down toward the static of a past injury. You see, now that has statics in it. So you force him into the static of belief. You forced him into this level of theta, and promptly you re-stimulate an old static. Now you can demand a person into a severe illness by making them obey. You want to know why the childhood illnesses are so frequent? Direct index between the illnesses in childhood, which are long, arduous, and severe, and the amount of blind obedience which a child has to go through. Axiom 11, a life organism is composed of matter and energy in space and time animated by theta. In short, there isn't much reason for you at this stage of the game to go processing theta. What you're processing is motion. Effort. Effort has motion in it. The theta will take care of itself. We just sort of notice that. It inherently will go back to a causative static when it is relieved of the static motions which have been imposed upon it. Whether it lives or dies isn't for us to ask. It at least goes back into a happier state. We extrapolate this from the fact that pre-clears get weller and weller and weller before they disappear. We assume that they're very well after they disappear. It's a reasonable assumption. Axiom 12, the messed part of the organism follows the laws of the physical sciences. All life is concerned with motion. Now, Again, that's the same thing. I wish you'd mark Axiom 11 there with about 3 stars. This is merely more or less a restatement of it. But it stresses the fact that we have 2 things in operation. We have a carbon-oxygen motor, which animates itself with carbon-oxygen-ized energy. It handles its arms and legs and goes along, and it's in motion. Its motion is caused by these things. That doesn't say that that motion motivates it. That has been an error and has produced a lot of erroneous things, such as the prefrontal lobotomy, such as psychiatrists. It's produced a heck of a lot of errors. Now, the mast side of the organism, the mast portion of that organism, is directly related with the physical universe and the physical sciences. Newton's 3 laws of motion are very observable in the physical organism, but not in the theta side of the organism. Now, there must have been 100 guys have beaten their brains in since the days of Newton, trying to figure out all life in terms of the 3 laws of motion. And after they get all through, then nothing happens. They figure out thought follows the laws of action, interaction, inertia, and all of these things go on. They get it all figured out, and when they get it all figured out, why, nothing happens. That's like trying to solve this problem about the store, and it has a store building, and it has stock in it. And you keep on looking at the store building and wondering why you never have any customers, but you never bother to look and see whether or not there's any stock in there. You just neglect the stock, and of course you get no customers. And it's just about what happened in these various efforts in that direction. Some of these efforts are really magnificent. The reason why these efforts are interesting at all is because an individual's mind makes a theta facsimile of the physical universe. And then he has a tendency, but only a tendency, to handle his thoughts as he handles objects in the physical universe. If you can't get anybody to throw something away, that person's doing the same thing with his theta facsimiles. He won't throw them away. You get a psycho who busily holds on to everything. You just observe this fact that the psycho is holding on to things, and you know immediately that the psycho cannot be straight-wired in any kind of relief, because this psycho is going to hold on to every thought. See, they handle their thoughts like mist. But that doesn't say immediately then that thought behaves on the 3 laws of motion. It behaves on facsimiles of the mist universe, which follows the 3 laws of motion, and thoughts don't follow the 3 laws of motion. They definitely do not. They contain physical universe, but that does not mean that they are physical universe. They do not have velocity, space, speed, none of these things. They don't even have wavelength. That's the best reason in the world why you should put an electric shock machine on a patient's head. Now, theta, working upon the physical universe motion, must maintain an harmonious rate of motion. The limits of lambda are narrow both as to thermal and mechanical motion. I described that a little bit earlier. What you're trying to do is get your preclear to an optimum motion. And you will find, oddly enough, that this optimum motion is a lot higher and faster in terms of physical behavior than you supposed, even though it's fairly fixed in terms of heartbeat, that people actually are built to move faster and think faster than normals. They're built to move and think quite a bit faster. But here you get the speed of use of the machine. And this society has gotten down till it's almost static in the use of the body. Automobiles, so on, static. And it is reflected in the degree of aberration in the society. Because as the body begins to approach a static state, it begins to think that it is in a static position. I will go right back before we take a break on one thing when I said the law of taking physical universe energy and imparting it again, as long as an organism, a human being, can pick up motions and actions, turn them around and fire them right back, utilize them, bend them to his own wishes and will, he's healthy. A more severe motion has a second effect. It takes the motion, damps its action, and kicks it out. It takes the motion, slows it down a little bit, and kicks it out. Or it holds it and dampens it. Or it receives it and then tries to equalize the body with it somehow, but still stay in action with it. Or it blocks it off. It lets it in and then blocks it off interiorly, this motion. Or it just lies back and lets the motion raise the devil with us, which is to succumb. I'll go over that scale again. At the top of it, we have the top of the tone scale. Guy receives motions, throws them back. You try to hurt this guy and he doesn't even know he's been hurt. He doesn't residually receive this stuff and throw it back again. He's hurt a little bit at a level where its action is damped. He just receives it, damps that action, throws it back. He's hurt a little bit. But when he holds it and dampens it, he's holding it and closing it down. But how do you stop? What is the dampening factor? You're dampening motion, and motion contains time. And the seconds you dampen down motion, you got a holder on the track right there because you're stopping time to that degree. You take this boy over the track again, you find out an area where he caught some motion and held onto it and tried to dampen it, and you'll find that he is sitting right there on the track. There was a holder because he tried to stop something that was stopping time, and the second he tried to stop something that had time in it, he stopped. Now, when he tries to equalize with it, that's just endurance. It's traveling at a certain rate of vibration, so he just goes into the certain rate of vibration, tries to ride it out. That's what's known as endurance. When he gives it a portion of his body, you've got physical medicine now, when he gives it a portion of his body, that's a sacrifice to it. He really is whipped along about this point. He's really way down below two when he says, it keeps hurting my hand, therefore we'd better amputate my arm. It keeps hurting my appendix, therefore we better take out my appendix. And when this motion comes along and forces the motion of the physical body to accord with the foreign incursive motion, the physical body succumbs on its self-determinism. It becomes under the determinism of the foreign motion. And the body itself becomes static as far as its own self-determinism is, and it then obeys. There's a static. There's depth. There's holders, groupers, and all the rest of them. A person can apparently get suddenly and wonderfully well just overnight, peculiarly, without any processing. What happens to him? His concept of his own ability to move, his concept of his own motion, rises up high enough on optimum to make him believe, a static, that he can simply throw back incoming motions, and all counter efforts impinged against his person disappear. And there goes psychosomatic illnesses. His static postulate with regard to them is, I don't have to endure. Now, all you've got to do to a human being is just convince him he's got to slow down and take it easy. That's all you've got to do, just slow down, take it easy. let's be calm about it. You know, one of these dynamic fellows, of course he got ulcers. Now, you better slow down and take it awful easy and get some rest. Now, don't work so hard at your job. I know you're interested in your job, but don't work so hard at it. And you bring this guy down the scale to where he will pick up incoming motions and hold them to damp them, and you will finally get him down the scale to where he will just succumb to them. All you've got to do is tell this fellow to slow down, and he'll get sick. Also, if you tell him to speed up beyond a point where he can speed up, he'll get sick. But it's much harder to speed a guy up into getting sick than it is to slow him down into getting sick. It's an odd thing, for instance, that a whole army can go out, fight a battle, endure enormous fatigues, wounded around and so forth, and they think they're all right until they all of a sudden found out they lost. The general made a report to Washington, and Washington went and told somebody else, and they finally came back to the troops, and they said, you know, you lost the battle. The oddity is that death rate of casualties goes right out through the bottom. You bring news of a defeat into a field hospital, and your incidence of mortality goes up. Wonderful. In addition to that, if you take a guy back from the front lines into the rear echelons and send him to a base hospital 1,000 miles away from the front, he might have had a chance of living up within the sound of the guns, but you get him to a base hospital and he'll kick the bucket. He was a part of an army that was traveling at a certain speed. When he's wounded and stays in close association with action, he keeps going at a high enough rate to get well. But then you say, now what this fellow needs is rest. The ship's base hospital back there, tell him to be calm and quiet, give him nothing to do, nothing to occupy his mind, nothing but rest. You've got a sick boy on your hand. If he's going to die from this thing, he'll die. We were doing that in this last war. We'd pick up guys kind-heartedly and we'd send them to Yosemite. We'd send them almost any place. The fellows who had ulcers and skin diseases and bullet holes in them and so forth, they just got so they weren't worth a damn after a while. That's a fact. Lie around a hospital for about 4 months and it's just as good as getting killed in action. Look at me. I've watched them do that. I finally was ready to blow my top on this stuff until I got 4 or 5 guys very, very interested in moving very fast, you might say, along certain lines. And these fellows got impatient and they got well and they left the hospital. There's where they make the misnomer of, we should get him interested in something. Let's let him follow some hobbies. Nothing serious. Let's don't let him get interested in anything serious. But if we can just give him a few hobbies or something, so that he'll walk down the corridor every day and walk back to his bed, why, he'll undoubtedly get well because we've picked up his interest in life. Now, there's what motion goes into. This is pain. It's merely a contradictory incoming motion to the motion of the body. I mean, it produces a randomity. The phenomenon is pain. What you're producing, then, if you keep telling pre-clears to lie very still, to be quiet, to approximate these various forces, you'll find out the forces will move right in on them because the forces are not in them. The forces exist in the theta facsimiles, which they're still holding to them to compare with their own velocities. And so you've got this fellow and you want to exhaust this force and counter effort and so forth. If you exhaust his own self-determined effort, this force will disappear. You don't have to build this force up to full magnitude. Let's take a break.